The Drama of the Week is a download from the BBC.
There is a county in the west of England, not well known, but which is, nevertheless, very dear to those who know it well. I could say it was always peaceful here, that birds praise the day and that the good folk of this county live in harmony from year to year, but that would not be gospel. We do live under God, though, and how could we not, with our own bishop, a dean, an archdeacon, and all their numerous chaplains, vicars, and hangers-on? But that's not even half the story. All of human life is here. The greedy and the good, the loving and the lost, the noble and the... Well, I think it best to let visitors decide for themselves. But this I will say. For us who live here, this place is a little taste of heaven, conjured by the good Lord out of birdsong, church bells, bees' wings, and a slow breeze in the summer leaves. I give you Barsetshire.
Mrs. Baxter, you have surpassed yourself. This is your best seed cake ever.
You're too kind, Mr. Harding.
It is wonderful.
Would you like some more, Dr. Ball?
I'm afraid I must resist, or I shall be unable to leave this chair.
No, I'm afraid I'm powerless to resist. I've reached the age where I have given up resistance.
I'm glad to hear it. Help yourself.
I like to think I am as indispensable to this diocese as my Lord Bishop himself. Where would they be without tea and cake? It is my daily joy to serve the saintly Mr. Harding and the lovely Eleanor.
Papa, can I tell Dr. Bold about the party?
I think you just have done, my dear.
Warden of Hiram's Hospital. That's Mr. Harding's title. Centuries back, a certain John Hiram set up this place in his will to care for tired old workmen, known as the beadsmen. I feed them, too, and a greedy, ungrateful gaggle they are.
A party? How delightful. What's the occasion?
Oh, it's Nellie's birthday. Unless you're proposing to give us another occasion to celebrate.
Please excuse my father, Dr. Bold. He has reached the age where he has given up discretion.
Well, a birthday party sounds delightful.
Oh. Forgive me, Dr. Bold. I didn't mean to make you blush.
Would anyone like more tea?
Your timing is impeccable, Mrs. Baxter, as ever.
My timing is always impeccable, and so is my hearing. No one would accuse me of being a busybody, not for a second. But a good housekeeper will know what's what. She can't help herself.
I'm afraid I must leave you. My sister is expecting me home for dinner.
I'll see you out, Dr. Bold.
I hope I haven't driven you away.
Of course you haven't.
The garden is so lovely at this time of year.
And please do invite me to the party.
You will be first on the list.
John, please forgive my father's wit.
There's nothing to forgive. I do dare to hope that at some stage... I mean, what your father said...
What are you trying to say?
I don't know, Helena. Forgive me.
There you are, Mr. Handy. Is that too tight?
No, ma'am. It's right for me.
I'll get your coat and stick.
Now, you must keep this dressing on and come back tomorrow so we can change it for you. That tincture will hurt for an hour or two, but it should help to salve the wound.
Dr. Bold, I am in your debt. And your good wife. She's a fine woman, sir.
Miss Bold is my sister, Mr. Handy, but you owe us no debt.
If I could pay you at twopence a week...
I wouldn't hear of it.
Well, more than that, I cannot...
No, no, no. This physician will not take a penny of your pittance. And you may tell your fellow beadsmen at Hiram's Hospital that my surgery is theirs if ever they should need it.
You are in all truth, sir, doing the work of the Lord himself, tending to the needs of poor pensioners.
Oh, come, come, Mr. Handy. I don't want your money, but I don't think you can claim abject poverty.
How come?
John Hiram's will must be worth a great deal of money.
Well, that all goes to the warden, sir.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Harding makes certain you're well looked after.
Each of us gets a pension. £62, 11 shillings and fourpence.
Is that all?
Well, it was less than that before. We get tuppence more now.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I count it. Every week, sir.
And do you know how much John Hiram's legacy produces every year?
Well, that's not my business, sir.
Then I shall make it mine.
Here you are, Mr. Handy.
Much obliged, madam. And to you, sir.
Did you hear that, Mary?
I heard you say you would make something your business.
I sense a grave injustice.
Be careful, John. You cannot fight everyone's battles for them. You do not have the constitution.
Oh, Mary.
I'm serious, John. You were sick for weeks when you took up the case of that turnpike woman.
She was robbing the poor. I had to. I will be careful. But this does sound like a case of grave injustice.
So it may be. But why do you have to take it on yourself?
I expected your support. Where's your Methodism, your radicalism?
I just worry about you, John.
Now, I can smell trouble before I see it. Any housekeeper can. It comes with the job. And the air in Hiram's hospital is thick this afternoon. Everything looks the same. Mr. Harding is giving his afternoon recital with his cello, and the beadsmen are sitting in the garden enjoying the sunshine. So even now, as the click of his footsteps meets my ears, I know something is amiss.
Bravo, Mr. Harding, sir. Bravo.
Oh, Bunce, you are too kind.
Oh, Dr. Bold.
I should like to speak with you, Mr. Harding.
Oh, well, that will be most agreeable, but I'm in the middle of my afternoon recital for the beadsmen.
Then pray don't let me disturb you. I shall wait.
Well, it's nothing.
May we converse in private, Mr. Harding? In your study, perhaps?
Yes, of course. Good beadsmen,
you are spared. The recital is over for this afternoon, as I must speak to Dr. Bold.
May I fetch you some tea, sir?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Baxter. Will you have some tea?
No, thank you. I cannot stay long.
Do call if you change your mind, sir. I'll leave you to your business.
Thank you, Mrs. Baxter. Oh, now you have me worried, Dr. Bold. Oh, there isn't some trouble between you and Eleanor, is there? She'll be home shortly and be delighted to find you here.
No, sir, it's nothing to do with Eleanor. I wish to speak to you about the hospital.
Well, anything I can tell you, I shall be most happy.
It's about the accounts.
Well, then, my dear fellow, I can tell you nothing, for I'm as ignorant as a child. All I know is that they pay me £800 a year. You'll need to speak to the diocesan steward about that.
800?
I know nothing more, I'm afraid. Now, tell me, is old Abel Handy's leg on the mend yet? I mean, he's had a terrible ulcer.
His leg will be fine if he keeps the dressing clean. But Mr. Harding, I hope you won't object to discussing what I have to say about the hospital.
Very well.
I have the greatest regard for you, Mr. Harding. The truest respect, the most sincere...
No, thank you, Mr. Boulder. I'm much obliged, but never mind all that. I'm as likely to be in the wrong as any man. More likely, I'm sure.
But, Mr. Harding, I must express what I feel, lest you think there is personal enmity in what I'm going to do.
Personal enmity? Going to do... you're not going to cut my throat, are you?
I fear there's reason to think that the founder John Hiram's will is not being carried out to the letter, Mr. Harding. And I feel duty-bound to look into the matter.
Very well. I've no objection on earth. How could I?
In doing this, I may appear to be interfering with you, and I do hope you will forgive me for doing so.
Oh, Dr. Bold, if you act justly, say nothing in this matter but the truth, and use no unfair weapons in carrying out your purposes, then I shall have nothing to forgive. Pray, do what you consider to be your duty. I will offer you no obstacle. Oh, here is Eleanor. Will you join us for tea now, Dr. Bold?
I cannot, I'm afraid. Mr. Harding, I have other business.
Mrs. Baxter, will you show the good doctor out?
Of course, sir.
Dr. Bold, I didn't expect to see you here.
Miss Harding, you will think me very impolite, but I'm afraid I have some urgent... thank you, Mrs. Baxter.
Well, he was in a hurry.
I think he has some business, Miss Eleanor.
Well, we shall have tea without him.
Business. Yes, he has business, all right. Other people's business. But that won't stop him stepping in with both boots. Bold by name and bold by nature.
Mrs. Baxter, I'm not hungry this evening. Too much sun, I think.
I can't get Mr. Harding to eat a scrap tonight, even though I cooked his favourite. And he sits in his chair in silence, drawing an imaginary bow across an imaginary cello. It helps him to think. But it doesn't help poor Miss Eleanor to stop being worried sick about her father.
Father?
Oh, my dear.
It was lamb tonight.
Too much sun this afternoon.
You never miss Mrs. Baxter's lamb stew.
I'm not going to starve. One night's fast will do me no harm.
What has worried you so much, Father? Is it something Dr. Bold said?
Oh, it is nothing about you and Dr. Bold, my dear Nelly.
Then what?
It's hospital business. I cannot talk about it until I have resolved it in my own mind.
Maybe I can help you to resolve it.
Oh, bless you, Nelly, you cannot. This is for me to resolve alone.
Could the Archdeacon help you to resolve it? He's very decisive.
Oh, he is indeed. Theophilus will know about it soon enough. But I must be clear in my own mind first.
So, he sits up most of the night, playing silent sacred songs on his imaginary cello, and she lies awake most of the night, worrying about her father, and wondering just what her suitor might have said to cause him such distress.
Thank you, Mary.
For what?
Dinner. It was delicious.
Same brisket we have every week, John. But I'm glad you liked it.
Are you in the Jupiter again?
John!
Who's going to hear me in our kitchen?
If it ever gets out that a woman writes it...
Ah, here you are. From the Pew by Mary Bold.
No, From the Pew by Zachariah.
What are you chiding the nation for this week?
It's about turning the other cheek.
Ah.
Aren't you going to read it?
Later. Mary, what about turning the other cheek if you're not the injured party?
I'm sorry?
If someone strikes us, we must not strike back, rather turn the other cheek. But what if that blow, that injustice, is being meted out on someone poorer and weaker than we are? Should we strike back then on behalf of the weak?
Is this your new cause? Are you planning to strike someone?
I don't know.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
Not many will, I fear.
Septimus. Oh, there are very few joys left for an old churchman like me, but your company is chief in their number.
No, I cannot offer you much joy this morning, Bishop.
Oh, I thought you looked less than your usual full-blooded self, Septimus. Oh, you could tell your oldest friend. Oh, come, come.
So, Mr. Harding tells the bishop all about John Bold and his holy mission to clean up the finances of Hiram's hospital. And the old bishop listens to his friend and nods like the sage he is. Then, when Mr. Harding finishes, he says just what Eleanor said last night.
I think we should refer this to the Archdeacon. The Archdeacon will sort it all out.
But, Bishop, did you ever read John Hiram's will?
I think I may have done 30, 40 years ago when I first came here.
Yeah, and do you remember the details?
Well, not the details, but I know for sure that I, as bishop, have the absolute right to confer the wardenship on whomever I see fit.
No, but the question is, Bishop, who has the power to decide how the funds from John Hiram's will are to be distributed?
Oh, I'm sure there's a statute barring the beadsmen from any increase in income beyond the measure that keeps them in comfort. Men more learned than you and I have pored over this will and judged its provisions to be fair and legal.
Yes, I'm sure.
And what's more, Septimus, there's natural justice at work here.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, are the men in your care not comfortable?
Oh, I believe they are, sir. I've never heard them complain. And if they want for anything, they have only to say and...
Well, exactly. And did you not raise their pittance by 2 pence a day per man from your own purse?
Well, yes.
Then there's no debate. Your income reflects the due difference in rank and responsibility of a diligent clergyman, who is, I might add, a very fine precentor of this cathedral.
Oh, yes.
And as long as the beadsman's needs are met, then there is nothing to discuss.
Well, I'm afraid Dr. Bold thinks there is.
Then Dr. Bold can take it up with the archdeacon.
But, Bishop, suppose I find that young Dr. Bold is right, and I am wrong.
Septimus, the man stands opposed to all that we hold dear. And if he gets his way, he will shut down the cathedral and distribute all its funds among Methodists and Baptists and other savage tribes. Oh, he is an enemy of the church.
Oh.
He probably doesn't believe in the Trinity.
Oh, come now, Bishop. He's a good man. In fact, I like Dr. Bold very much, personally. And Eleanor is very fond of him.
Families complicate matters at the best of times. But in a small town like Barchester, well... it's a real tangle. Not only is Mr. Harding threatened by the very man who wants to marry his Eleanor, but the bishop is to unleash Dr. Theophilus Grantly, the formidable archdeacon, as defender of the church. And, of course, the archdeacon is married to Mr. Harding's elder daughter, Susan. And I may not have mentioned another family connection. The archdeacon is the bishop's son. Yes, no one here quite believes it either. How could that mild old cleric have produced the force of nature known as Archdeacon Grantly? You may wonder why John Bold would wish to join this of all families. Well, if he does, he's going a funny way about it.
Come on, Sculpit, you old fool, sign it! We need all the Beesman's name on this petition. That's what the doctor said.
Abel Andy, what are you plotting?
You get off your high horse, Bunce. No one put you in charge of us.
No, Mr. Arden's our warden, and I'll thank you to remember it.
Ah, and he does very nicely on it with our money.
How dare you?
Dr. Bold says we are entitled to £100 a year each.
And what are you going to do with these riches? Do you want for anything?
That's not the point.
Has Mr. Harding ever refused you anything you asked for?
If Sculpit signs this, we shall have a majority.
Sculpit's not a well man. Look at him. This petition will not help him. It'll bring nothing but grief upon us.
Sculpit's name on this, and then they'll have to talk to us.
Abel Andy, you are a traitor. Plotting behind a good man's back. You wait till the archdeacon gets wind of this.
Oh, he's got wind of it, all right. Imagine, if you will, the country roads between Plumstead Episcopi, residence of Archdeacon Theophilus Grantly, and the path leading up to Hiram's Hospital. Woe betide any sunstruck cow or ale-struck farmhand who gets in the way of this red-faced defender of the faith as he rides like a fury into Barchester, muttering under his breath.
Oh, Archdeacon.
Warden.
We weren't expecting you. Do join us.
I need to speak with you most urgently.
Oh, we can speak over tea. You'd be very welcome.
Well, this cannot wait.
All right, off you go, all of you. The recital is over.
The warden was just halfway through his favourite piece, sir.
Back to your rooms, all of you. I need to speak to the warden immediately.
Put down that fiddle and walk with me.
Oh, slow down, Theophilus. Oh, slow down. I'm not as limber as I was.
That petition. Why on earth did you let them sign a petition?
Have you seen my roses? Oh, great joy they give
the
me.
The authority you have in this place and a friend like Bunce. Why, oh, why did you not just destroy it?
Destroy their petition? How could I? It's what they believe.
It is not. That's precisely what it isn't. It's what that pestilent enemy of the just, John Bull, believes. It's him filling their heads with his poison.
Please be temperate, Theophilus. Eleanor is very fond of Dr. Bold, and so am I.
Then you are very foolish, Septimus.
Perhaps I am.
He will stop at nothing to destroy us. Your sister Mary is a Methodist. Did you know that?
Oh, I had heard something.
She spends every Sunday in that tawdry little chapel, plotting to bring down the Church of England.
I'm sure she doesn't.
And rumour has it, she's behind that dreadful From the Pew column in the Jupiter.
Now, rumours are nothing
but more... But don't worry. We will defeat John Bold. I have taken legal advice, and I am told we must secure Sir Abraham Haphazard. Oh, yes. I shall not have the slightest fear in leaving the case into Abraham's hands. Queen's Counsel, a thorough churchman, a seat in Parliament. I think Sir Abraham will not be long in letting Master Bold know what he's about. I fancy I hear Sir Abraham cross-questioning him in court.
Has the petition gone to the bishop?
Yes, my father has it. Not that he's given it much notice. I took it off his hands. They will sorely wish they had destroyed it themselves.
But why shouldn't they petition?
Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they? I'll let them know exactly why they shouldn't. Get them together now. Here in the garden. All beadsmen, please gather immediately in the garden.
But you've only just dismissed them. I'd much sooner treat this matter quietly, Theophilus.
Quietly? Do you wish to be ruined quietly?
Well, if I am to be ruined, yes.
Nonsense, Warden. I tell you, something must be done. We must act now, decisively.
The beadsmen are all gathered, sir.
Thank you, Bounce.
Would you excuse me if I go inside?
For heaven's sake, don't let us have divisions in the camp. Let us all pull together. Come, Warden. Don't be afraid of your duty. Now, my men. Your good friend, the Warden here, and myself, and my Lord the Bishop, on whose behalf I wish to speak to you, would all be very sorry indeed if you should have any just ground of complaint. Any just ground of complaint on your part would be dealt with at once, without the necessity of a petition.
Hear, hear, sir.
Thank you, Bounce. Without the necessity of any petition at all. However, I'm told that you have addressed a petition to my lord, the bishop. Is that correct?
Yes, we have.
So, pray tell me, what is it you want that you haven't got here?
100 a year.
That's right.
100 a year. 100 per year. Mm. And you dare talk about John Hiram's will? When John Hiram built a hospital for worn-out old labouring men, do you think he intended to make gentlemen of them? No, no, my man. He meant that 12 poor, old, worn-out workers, men who could no longer support themselves, who would starve if not protected by the hand of charity, such men should come here in their poverty and wretchedness and find within these walls shelter and food before their death, and a little leisure to make their peace with God.
The men look tired. May I let them go now?
I haven't finished. Now let me ask you, Beatsman, a question. Do you think that you are worse off than John Hiram intended to make you? Have you not twice better food, twice a better bed, 10 times more money in your pocket than you were ever able to earn for yourselves before you were lucky enough to get into this place? Yes. And now you send a petition to the bishop asking for £100 a year. I tell you what, my friends, you are made fools of by wicked men who are acting for their own ends. You will never get 100 pence a year more than you have now. It is very possible that you may get less. It is possible that my lord the bishop and your warden may make changes.
Oh, no, no, my friends, I want no changes. At least no changes that shall make you worse off than you are now, as long as you and I live together.
God bless you, Mr. Harding.
God bless you, sir.
Come, Archdeacon, would you take a small sherry?
Very well. I think I spoke to them plainly.
Oh, you were plain enough.
With those sort of people, one must be plain. Or one will not be understood.
I'm sure they understood.
They know we are not afraid of them. I'll take a sherry, and
Then I'll go up to the palace and answer that petition of theirs.
How lovely, John. We're invited to the warden's tea party.
Yes. It's in Eleanor's honour. I have an invitation here.
Mine is from Eleanor herself, for both of us.
And mine is handwritten by the warden requesting the pleasure of my company.
How odd.
I think Eleanor was writing the official invitations. The warden's card is especially for me.
Well, I suppose we should write separate answers, saying we shall both be very happy.
You'll go, of course, Mary. But I cannot. I wish I could with all my heart.
Why not?
I fear I cannot go to Mr. Harding's house any more as a friend. Not at present.
Oh, John, why not? You've quarrelled with Eleanor, have you?
No, I've no quarrel with Eleanor.
Then come to the party.
There's something I must tell you, Mary.
What?
I've taken up the case of the 12 old men of Hiram's Hospital, and that brings me into contact with Mr. Harding. I may have to oppose him. Interfere with him, perhaps injure him.
Oh, no, John. So that's the cause you've picked up for those old men?
I feel I have no choice.
I don't understand.
I'm not sure I can explain it. Not in a way that will convince you.
Try.
John Hiram made a will and left a charity for certain poor old men, but the proceeds, instead of going to the men, go chiefly into the pocket of the warden.
And you mean to take away Mr. Harding's share of it?
I don't know what I mean yet. I mean to inquire about it. I mean to see who is entitled to this money. I mean to see that justice be done to the poor men of Barchester. I mean, in short, to put the matter right. If I can.
And why are you the man to do this, John?
You might ask the same question of anyone. Who do these old men belong to? If we're to act on that principle, the weak will never be protected.
But is there no one else who could pursue this? No one but you, who have known Mr. Harding for so long.
That's woman's logic all over, Mary. If the thing itself be right to do, then what has friendship to do with it? Because I esteem Mr. Harding, is that a reason I should neglect my duty?
Don't you have a duty to Mr. Harding too?
I would have thought that you, of all people, with your radical chapel credentials, would support me in challenging corruption in the established church.
Corruption? Ugh. I'm not listening to this.
Wait. What else would you call it?
There's plenty of corruption in the Church of England, but poor Mr. Harding is the wrong target.
I disagree.
And what about Eleanor?
There is no necessity now to talk about Eleanor. But I will say this. If she has the kind of spirit for which I give her credit, she will not condemn me for doing what I believe to be my duty.
Oh, John. Think better of this. You're going to make yourself and her father miserable. You're going to make all of us miserable. You'll make yourself ill again. And for what? A dream of justice. You will never make those 12 men happier than they are now.
You simply don't understand,
John, it. John, please.
My mind is not in doubt. I could never respect myself again were I to give way now.
It's hard work for a housekeeper, a tea party. The hours I put in baking and brewing and making sure they all keep full cups and plates. But this one is at least diverting. There are fat old ladies in fine silk dresses, slim young ladies in gauzy muslin frocks, old gentlemen stood up with their backs to the empty fireplace, and young gentlemen clustered near the door with too little courage to attack the muslin frocks. And the loudest voice in the room, of course, is the Archdeacon's.
The wolves are circling around the church. Have you heard those fearful rumours of the mad reforms at Oxford? Yeah, even Oxford, yes.
In a quiet corner, Miss Eleanor is in conversation with her suitor's sister, Mary Bold.
I knew something was wrong, Mary. But Papa wouldn't tell me. He's trying to protect you, I'm sure. And to protect your affection for my brother.
Why is John doing this?
He believes it's his duty.
His duty? To destroy my father's reputation?
I know.
And I was fool enough to think him fond of me.
He thinks the world of you, Eleanor.
Clearly he does not.
Please, Eleanor, forgive John if you can.
Ah, thank you very much, sir.
It's my pleasure, Mr. Towers.
Cheers. Mm. No, the pleasure is mine to meet the brother of the mysterious miss from the pew. We've never seen her, you know. She files a copy of Zechariah, refuses payment, but she writes so beautifully.
My sister is very humble.
I'm sure she is.
But it's not my sister I've come to discuss.
Oh, really? Do you want a column in the Jupiter too?
No, nothing like that. But I do have a story that might interest you.
Well, you will find me a most attentive listener, Dr. Bold.
I thought it went very well.
Yes, my dear, it seemed to go delightfully.
But it was odd that Dr. Bold wasn't there. Do you know why not?
He was invited. I wrote to him myself. I'm sure he would want to celebrate your birthday if he possibly could.
But do you know why he didn't?
Have you been talking to someone?
Mary.
I see. I was trying to keep you out of all this.
Oh, Papa. What will come of it? Will he put you in danger?
What sort of danger?
Danger of trouble. Danger of loss.
Come here, Nelly. I want you to know that John Bold is no enemy of mine, and I will do nothing to discourage your affections. Your heart must not be torn apart out of loyalty to some old clergyman.
Miss Harding? Eleanor? My sister tells me that you had a delightful party yesterday evening. I'm so sorry I couldn't be there. I believe, Miss Harding, that you understand why at this moment. I think my sister explained to you...
Mary told me everything.
Your father is all that is kind and generous. I do hope you will not judge me too harshly.
You may be sure of one thing. If I see my father attacked by those who ought to know and love him, then I shall judge them to be wrong and I shall set myself against them.
I have nothing but respect for your father.
I gave my heart to you, John Bold, and my father gave his too. It seems we were both fooled.
Eleanor, if I thought for one moment you might doubt my affection for you...
I've heard enough.
Eleanor, my dear Eleanor!
No, John Bold, not your dear, not now.
Oh, my Lord. What have I done?
Your newspaper, Mr. Hoffman.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Baxter. The tea party went well, I think.
I think it was a great success, sir.
And not least because of your great efforts in the kitchen, Mrs. Baxter. They were very much appreciated.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Are there any of those wonderful scones left?
Not 2 minutes later, and I'm in the kitchen loading up a plate with scones when... I rush through, of course, but he's run out of the house.
Only in the Church of England.
Mr. Harding, have you seen the Jupiter this morning?
Could such a state of moral indifference...
So, clutching his copy of the Jupiter, poor Mr. Harding stumbles across to the bishop's palace and bursts into the Lord's breakfast room, where he finds the bishop and the archdeacon with a copy of the Jupiter in hand.
Oh, my Lord Bishop... What can be done? Moral indifference.
Calm down, Morton. Calm down. It is time to act.
We are informed that the warden of an old almshouse attached to Barchester Cathedral is in receipt of 25 times the annual income appointed for him by the will of the founder.
Oh, John, what have you done?
Listen, Mary. We at the Jupiter must express an opinion that nowhere but in the Church of England, and only there among its priests, could such a state of moral indifference be found. Moral indifference? Where did they get a phrase like that?
Poor Mr. Harding must be inconsolable.
I have to say, Mary, although it is gratifying to see a just cause taken up by the Jupiter, I do find the language intemperate, and I worry...
That you will lose Eleanor.
Yes.
Well... You should have thought of that before you started all this.
In Plumstead Episcopi, the Archdeacon is plotting. Well, he's not actually plotting. He's shut in his study reading a scurrilous book and pretending to be plotting.
Susan, do please knock so you don't disturb my concentration. I'm working on the Hiram's Hospital case.
Well, you'll want to see this then.
delivered just now by the diocesan steward.
Thank you, thank you.
I'm in the garden with the children, if you'd like to join us.
Yes! Yes, 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 yes!
Theophilus, are you all right?
This is everything I hoped for and more. That pestilent demon Bold will be knocked off his perch with this, all right.
Theophilus, please be temperate in front of the children.
Yes, 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 yes. I must go, Susan. My father has to see this.
You tell him, Father.
Septimus, we have some good news.
Oh?
Sir Abraham's learned opinion on the case has come through at last.
And is it favourable?
More than favourable, Mr. Harding. In the opinion of the finest lawyer in the land, John Bold doesn't have a leg to stand on.
But how, Archdeacon?
The gist of the matter is this. Under Hiram's will, there is provision for 2 paid servants for the hospital. One to look after the money, that's the diocesan steward, and one to look after the men, and that's you. The will says those servants will be paid. There's no argument about that.
Oh, that does seem clear.
But the pay they are given must be set at a fit rate for the market value of the period in question, and the only appointed judges of that market value are the managers of the hospital.
And who are the managers of the hospital?
Oh, let them find that out. That's another question. They've brought the case against you, and that's the wrong target. In Sir Abraham's opinion, a jury would throw this out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, but if the managers chose to allot 1,600 a year instead of 8, and if I am one of the managers myself, then that can hardly be a just arrangement.
That's beside the point entirely. Because the managers would not do that. The point is that these pestilent dissenters cannot interfere with an arrangement which everyone knows is just and serviceable to the church.
Septimus, what do you say? Are you relieved?
What about the Jupiter?
Oh, the Jupiter can break no bones. Besides, the matter is too trivial to be mentioned again in any newspaper.
May I walk, Bishop?
Where?
Up and down your parlour, Bishop.
Oh, of course, Septimus, if it helps you. We thought you would be comforted by this.
I have read that Jupiter article over and over again.
Oh, don't torture yourself.
It's good for lighting fires, that's all.
And if it can be proved that I have a just and honest right to this salary, as God well knows I always deemed I had, then I shall be happy to retain it. And I have the well-being of my child to look to, and I'm too old to miss without pain some of the comforts I enjoy. I mean, I am as anxious as you are to prove that I am not corrupt, but I cannot do it at such a cost as this. Those words, moral indifference, I cannot forget them.
It's just some tawdry little newspaper man trying to make a name for himself.
I cannot bear it. Please, my Lord Bishop, tell me what I should do.
You shall do just what your heart tells you to be right, Theophilus. Theophilus, please don't advise the warden to do anything which is painful.
Well, Father, there are 2 kinds of advice. There is advice that may be good for the present, and there is advice that may be good for days to come. I cannot bring myself to give the former if it will be incompatible with the latter.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, I see.
What would happen if one of us backed down in the face of this attack? Is it not plain that such attacks will be renewed until the whole Church of England falls to the ground?
Yeah, but those accusations, I mean, moral indifference.
If you were to throw up the wardenship now, to relinquish what is yours by right and in law, you would encourage every cantankerous dissenter in England to make a similar charge against the church. I can fancy nothing more weak or wrong or selfish. Oh. It is not that you think there is justice in these charges against you. You would only yield to them through cowardice.
Cowardice? Mm-hmm.
Cowardice is a very strong word.
Yes, would it not be cowardice?
It is so wounding. I mean, the Jupiter.
So, in a fit of passion, You want to throw up the only maintenance that Eleanor has? And he wouldn't stop there. If you have no future right to that income, you have no past right either, so you would receive demands for repayment of years of your income.
But I do not have that money.
And even aside from yourself and your family, you owe it to the church to bear with this affliction. You owe it to my father here, who instituted you. You owe it to those who will come after you into the priesthood. By upholding one another, we may support our great cause without blushing and without disgrace.
My goodness, Theophilus.
I hope you both agree with me.
Yes, I suppose so.
And you, Warden? Warden?
Do not press me for an answer just at present, please. I will do nothing lightly in this matter, and whatever I do, I will give you and the bishop notice. Where are the other beadsmen this evening?
I don't wish to talk about them, sir. Fired up with money and treachery, they are.
I see. Perhaps I've played enough for now.
Oh, please, sir, carry on. It gladdens my heart.
I'm sorry, Bunce. I cannot play. I haven't the heart for it tonight.
I'm sorry for your trouble, Mr. Harding. If there was anything to cheer you, I should be glad to know it.
Oh, my friend, my dear old friend. There's nothing. God's will be done. And I have work to do. Good work. Precentor's work. I have to prepare the music for Sunday. Oh, Nellie, my dear, you frightened me.
You've been working for hours.
Well, I have to get these scores ready for Sunday, or the choir will have nothing to sing.
Let them make it up.
She knows better than anyone how to lift her father out of his despond. She sits on his lap, as she has since she was a tiny girl, and puts her arms around his neck.
Papa? Won't you tell me what it is?
You know what it is, my dear.
But is there some new sorrow that torments you?
Oh, it's nothing new, my dear. God, I mustn't be a dull companion. Come, let's have some music.
No, Papa, I will not let you go until you talk to me.
You are a most disobedient daughter.
I know about the hospital and the petition and what that cruel newspaper has said, but what else? If there be some new cause for sorrow, then let's be sorrowful together.
Oh, my darling child. Why should you be unhappy before it is necessary? It may come to that if we must leave this place, but why should your young days be clouded?
Is that it, Papa? Is that all? If that is it, then give it up. Give it up. I could live anywhere. As long as we have bread to eat and light in our hearts, then what does it matter?
So he holds his daughter tight and lets himself sob, for he's been holding those tears in for weeks.
John will not be long, Eleanor. May I get you some tea?
I've just had breakfast with my father, thank you. What time will Dr. Bold return?
He'll be back soon because he has to catch the London train at 11.
I must see your brother before he goes.
Of course. I know he'll be delighted to see you.
I don't think he'll want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, Eleanor, please remember that despite all this business, John loves you better than anything in the world.
Mary, that is nonsense.
No.
I must apologise for interrupting your conversation, Miss Harding. You must think me very impolite.
Miss Harding has come to speak with you, John. I explained that you're about to leave for London.
Of course, it would be my pleasure, and I have some time before the train.
I have to make a visit myself, if you'll excuse me, Eleanor.
Of course.
London is a very stupid town. I detest having to leave Barchester to go there, but needs must. And it's so hot in the city, the summer breezes here make it far more pleasant. How is your father, Eleanor?
My father is not very well.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I especially want to speak to you about my father, Dr. Bold.
Of course.
Papa is very unhappy. Very unhappy indeed about this affair of the hospital. You would weep for him if you could see how wretched it has made him.
Oh, Eleanor, there's no one here. You can call me John.
Dr. Bold, anyone would weep for my father now, but an old friend as you are. Indeed, you should. He is an altered man. His cheerfulness has gone, and his sweet temper, and his kind, happy tone of voice. You would hardly know him if you saw him. And if this goes on, he will break his heart and die. I dare to hope that it was not you personally who wrote those savage things in the newspaper.
Oh, Eleanor, it was not. It was not.
And I know that Mary would not write such things, her Jupiter columns.
Oh, no, Mary would never dream of writing.
But that newspaper has nearly killed him. Papa cannot bear to think that people should so speak of him as avaricious, dishonest, robbing the old men.
I have never used those words, Miss Harding.
I'm sure you have not used those words, but you started this. And if it goes on, it will kill him. Dr. Bold, my father does not care about money.
Of course not. There is no man alive less enthralled to money than the warden.
He would give up the hospital and his salary tomorrow, only he cannot. The Archdeacon says it would be cowardly and that he would be damaging the church. Whatever happens, Papa will not do that. Oh, how I wish he would.
No one who knows Mr. Harding accuses him for a moment.
But it is he that has to bear the punishment. He that suffers. And what for? What has he done wrong? He that never had an unkind thought in his life, never said an unkind word.
Nobody blames Mr. Harding personally.
Then why should he be persecuted? Why is he singled out for scorn and disgrace? And why did you begin all this? You whom we all so valued.
I had no intention to harm Mr. Harding. It was a public duty. I had to...
Dr. Bold, I have come here to implore you to abandon this, to spare my father. I know how much I'm asking, but I pray that you will listen, because this is for my father. I pray, I beg of you, Dr. Bold, do not drive to distraction a man who has loved you so well.
I would give you my soul, Eleanor, if it would serve you. You know my feelings for you.
Don't say that. I do not ask anything for myself. I ask it for my father.
Everything I have is yours. If you will accept it, my house, my heart, my all, my every hope is centred in you, and when I see you in sorrow as you are now, every nerve in my body suffers.
No, there can be no talk of love between us. Will you protect my father from the evil you have brought upon him?
Oh, Eleanor, I will do anything.
I will not leave here till you promise me. I'll kneel in front of you now until you promise me. Will you leave my father to die in peace in his own home?
Do not kneel before me, Eleanor, it shames me.
Promise me that my father is safe and I will get up. One word. One word will do, and I shall never trouble you again.
I will promise to do what I can for your father. But what do you mean, never trouble me again?
You will spare my father.
All I can do, I will do. It's a quiet place to think. Does it offend your Methodist principles?
I'm just here to put some pamphlets at the back.
The vergers will remove them. You're wasting your time.
Two people have already picked them up.
Oh, two souls, one back from the monstrous Church of England.
Why are you talking like this, John? Are you angry with me?
No. Not you.
Are you angry with Eleanor?
Far from it.
She's just trying to protect her father.
And I have agreed to desist.
Thank the Lord.
But it's not that simple, is it? Although I began this proceeding, there are many others involved now. A runaway train is not easy to stop.
Papa, may I disturb you?
Oh, of course, Nelly. I'm still working on Sunday's anthems, so a disturbance is welcome.
I have some good news, Papa. I have spoken to Dr. Bold, and he asks me to tell you that he has abandoned his lawsuit.
Well, Dr. Bold is an honourable man, and he will act as he thinks right, but...
But what?
I'm afraid it cannot alter my purpose.
I thought you would be happy, Papa. He's going to stop the whole case.
Dr. Bold has set great people to work, and I doubt they're within his control. Have you seen this?
Oh, why do you still read the Jupiter, Papa? It is poison.
Well, Dr. Bold can't have these newspapers unwritten, my dear. And he can't say they won't be read by every clergyman up and down the land.
But they will see it for what it is.
Yes, they will see it for what it is, a list of truths. All the facts in this story are correct.
But the conclusion...
The only fitting conclusion I can see is that I have no right to be here.
No right?
No right to continue as the warden of Hiram's hospital, living off the fat of a will intended for charity.
But Dr. Bold has withdrawn his complaint.
He must do what he believes to be right. And so must I.
John Bold doesn't know what's hit him. I saw him pacing the cathedral close this morning like a bear with a head full of bees, and no one could comfort or talk to him. Sometimes a man like Dr. Bold doesn't know how much he cares for a lady until he thinks he's lost her. And it's not hard to see how he thinks he's lost poor Eleanor. But what did he expect, setting upon her father like that? Can he ever make amends? No one can fault him for trying. And as he dismounts his horse on the lawn at Plumstead Episcopi, it's an idyllic scene, with those young scamps, Henry and Griselda Grantly, playing prince and princess in the garden. Delusions of grandeur, inherited from their papa.
Would your majesties mind taking care of my horse while I talk to your father?
And my, doesn't the archdeacon look pleased with himself as he comes out to greet this visitor?
Ah, Dr. Bold! What can I do for you on this fine afternoon?
I hope you'll excuse my calling uninvited, Dr. Grantly.
Of course, you couldn't have picked a better day to visit.
Shall we talk inside?
It's such a beautiful afternoon, Dr. Bold, and I fancy the conversation will be brief, so let's stay out here.
Very well. I have come to tell you that my campaign is over.
Ah, so you are desirous of abandoning your attack upon Mr. Harding.
There was no attack, sir. I assure you.
Well, let's not quarrel about words. I think most men would call an endeavour to strip every shilling of income from an old man an attack, but if you don't like the word...
I intend to put an end to the legal proceedings which I have commenced.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised. Carrying a losing lawsuit when one has nothing to gain but everything to pay... is not pleasant.
You misinterpret my motives, sir. But I didn't come to talk about my motives. I've told you what I came to say. Good day, Dr. Grant.
One moment. You engage me in conversation in my own garden unannounced. You should at least hear what I have to say.
Very well.
Having exposed a gentleman who is one of your warmest friends to all the ignominy which the press could heap upon him, having ostentatiously declared that it was your duty as a man of high public virtue to protect those poor old fools you have humbugged up at the hospital, you now find the game costs more than it's worth. Huh? Well, it's a pity you took so long to reach this decision. Has it occurred to you that we may not choose to end the matter, that we may find it necessary to punish the injury you have done to us? And the costs. Do you have any idea how much it costs to secure the services of the Attorney General?
I do not, sir, but I'm sure any costs can be settled if Mr. Harding's lawyer contacts my lawyer.
Let me tell you what my opinion is, Dr. Bold. I think we shall not allow you to withdraw this matter from the courts.
You can do as you please, Dr. Grantly. Good afternoon.
Hear me out, sir. I have here in my hands the final opinion on this matter of Sir Abraham Haphazard.
I see.
In which he declares most explicitly that you have no leg to stand on,
that Mr. Harding is as safe in his hospital as I am here in my rectory, that a more futile attempt to destroy a man was never made. That is the opinion of the very first lawyer in the land. And you expect me to bow before you when you graciously offer to stop torturing that poor old man? I wish you good afternoon, Dr. Bell, for I am busy.
I came here, Dr. Grantly, with the kindest feelings, and they have been grossly outraged by your treatment.
I have chosen not to let my father-in-law be ruined. What an outrage to your feelings.
The time will come, Dr. Grantly, when you will understand why I called on you today.
I like to get to the hospital early, before anyone's stirring, so I can make Mr. Harding his breakfast. But as I'm opening the garden gate this bright Barchester morning...
Oh, Mrs. Baxter, I am sorry.
You nearly knocked me off my feet there, Mr. Harding.
I'll not be needing breakfast, Mrs. Baxter.
Are you all right, Mr. Harding? I've been worried about you.
Where are you going? It's barely dawn.
Well, I didn't mean to wake you, Nelly.
I'll go and get the breakfast off, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Baxter.
And I must hurry, Nelly. I have a train to catch.
Why didn't you say? Where are you going?
I've been awake all night, my dear, thinking and praying, and I've decided upon a course of action.
Oh, Papa, do be careful.
Mr. Harding isn't the only soul heading for London this morning with his mind full of Barchester. Picture, if you will, a train on its way from the north and a very self-important little man sitting on it, as he does each day, reading his copy of the Jupiter.
Oh, tickets, please! Sir? Sir?
All right. Can't you see I'm reading?
Only doing me job, sir.
Yes, well, I'm trying to do mine.
And he is, because as one of the staff writers on the Jupiter, it is no doubt part of Tom Tower's job to read his own stories on his way to the office and to smile down from Mount Olympus at the poor folk who have to suffer his thunderbolts.
All change, please. This is the end of the line. And you, sir. All change, please.
Pocket tyrant, aren't you?
And this morning's Jupiter gives Mr. Towers more than his usual share of delight because his campaign to bring down poor Mr. Harding is on pages 2, 3, 4, and 5.
4 pages of detailed argument. My dear Bald, this is catching fire. On my train this morning, everyone was reading it. Everyone.
That's what I've come to discuss, Tom.
I mean, the power of it. This paper in my hands can change the world. Who would have dreamt 20 years ago that the sword of justice would be made of paper?
I want to ask you to oblige me in an important matter, Tom.
Well, fire away, John. Keep me nourished. We make a fine team. What else can you give me?
I've abandoned the lawsuit.
Oh, yes?
Yes, I've given it up. I needn't trouble you with all the history, but the fact is that the conduct of Mr. Harding... Mr. Harding is the man.
He's the man who takes all the money and does nothing.
His conduct in this matter has been so unselfish, so open, so excellent that I cannot proceed with this lawsuit to his detriment.
It'll cost you a fortune in legal fees.
A few hundred, yes. Perhaps 3. I can't help that, and I'm prepared for it.
Well, how refreshing to hear a man talking about £300 in such indifferent terms. But I'm sorry you've given up the case. It injures a man to take up a cause and not carry it through. But you've lit a fire. That's the important thing. You'll have seen a copy of The Almshouse.
The Almshouse? No.
I have it here somewhere.
Is this the writer with the foolish pen name? I've read about it.
Mr. Popular Sentiment's new novel. Here it is. Now, borrow it. Read it. Though I suspect you'll be familiar with most of it already.
I don't read novels.
Yeah, well, it's a direct attack on the whole corrupt edifice. I have great expectations that it will bring down the church in Rochester, Dulwich, St. Cross, but especially in Barchester.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It's clear from reading it that Sentiment has been down to Barchester and got the whole story there. Well, indeed, I thought he must have heard it all from you.
I've never met the man. I told him nothing.
The fire has gone too far to be quenched now. The building must go. The timbers are all rotten. You are on the verge of a great victory.
I could not continue because I found I was in the wrong.
Well, I disagree. But if that's what your conscience tells you, of course you must abandon
it. And I came here this morning to ask you to abandon it too.
To ask me? But you were the one who brought this to the Jupiter.
Yes. The Jupiter has taken this matter up very strongly, and Mr. Harding has felt it very deeply. And I thought that if I could explain to you that he personally has been blameless, these articles might be discontinued.
My dear fellow, I cannot answer for the Jupiter.
But if you saw that these articles were unjust, I have no doubt that you could stop them.
No, I cannot.
Come on, Towers. I have no doubt that you wrote those articles yourself, and very well written they were. It would be a great favour if you will, in future, abstain from any personal allusion to poor Mr. Harding.
My dear Bald, let me explain. None who are connected with the public press can listen to any outside interference.
Interference? I don't want to interfere.
Oh, but you do. And what else is this? Surely your sister has explained the importance of the freedom of the press to you.
Mary.
Indeed. Our star columnist, Zechariah.
I think you'll find a letter on its way to you resigning her column.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
She's been shocked by the tone of these stories about Mr. Harding.
So, you have come here to try and stop certain remarks appearing in a public newspaper?
Well, I suppose so.
And suppose for a moment that I had this power and used it to change the Jupiter's cause as you wish. Wouldn't that be a most terrible abuse? The public is defrauded if private motives influence the public press. The Jupiter must make a stand.
The Jupiter is making its stand on every street corner as poor Mr. Harding bustles his way to the Chapter Hotel near St. Paul's Cathedral, the London hotel of choice for every churchman. He drops off his bags and checks that a certain Archdeacon Grantly has not yet checked in. For all his holiness, Mr. Harding is no innocent. He knows he can't resign his post without talking to the Archdeacon, but he doesn't relish that encounter, so he's written a letter.
My dear Dr. Grantly, it is with great regret and after
and
much
he sent it to Plumstead Episcopi just before he caught his train.
I have decided to set this matter to rest in the only way my conscience will allow.
In the sure knowledge that it would set the Archdeacon on a mercy mission to London.
What? In the name of all that is good!
To try to stop the warden ruining his campaign to save the church.
On the very brink of victory.
So, having ascertained that his son-in-law has not arrived in London, and reminded himself that, formidable though he is, not even the Archdeacon can alter the train timetables, Mr. Harding knows he has until early evening to fulfil his mission.
Oh, officer, I'm here on clergy business.
I'm afraid no one can enter the Houses of Parliament without a formal letter, sir.
Ah, well, Sir Abraham Haphazard is acting on my behalf at the moment, and I have a letter here.
It would be with some excitement that Mr. Harding made his first visit to the Houses of Parliament, were it not on such a grave mission.
I'm afraid that even your letter won't get you in to meet Sir Abraham until this evening, sir. He cannot be interrupted.
Only to find Sir Abraham in court all day.
Not until this evening. Oh, well, I shall have to return then. I have important business to discuss with him.
I'm sorry to have to say this, Susan, but your father is behaving like a selfish and cowardly old folk.
Calm down, Theophilus. You'll need a doctor by the time we reach London.
How can I calm down?
Oh, tickets, please.
Here you are.
Thank you kindly. Ooh, man of the cloth are you, sir?
Hmm?
Have you seen a Jupiter this morning?
How dare you!
What is an unsettled clergyman to do with an afternoon to himself in London? Mr. Harding can't wait for Sir Abraham for 5 hours at the Houses of Parliament. And he can't go back to the hotel for fear of meeting his son-in-law.
Watch out, you idiot!
Oh, sorry.
And he doesn't feel himself at all, poor man. He feels that every pair of eyes is on him, and they've all read every bad word in the Jupiter about him. So he staggers down the Strand until he sees a sign for chops and steaks, coffee and cigars.
Will you be dining, sir?
I think I will, yes, thank you.
I'll put you in the back room. It's quieter there.
So he slowly eats his chop and potatoes. But the grace, he says, over his meal is a bit longer than usual.
Oh, Lord, I'm so sorry to bring your church into such disrepute. Give me the strength to do what is right, for I am full of fears. Can I support dear Nelly on £150 a year? And shall I be a worthy servant of the parishioners of Crabtree Parva? I know that Nelly is in love with Dr. Bold, and he with her. Help him to see, O Lord, that since his actions have brought this circumstance upon us, he may make haste to marry Nelly and secure her future. O Lord, give me the strength.
Would you like a cigar now, sir? And a ticket for coffee? 1 shilling.
A cigar? Well, I'm not sure.
It comes with the price of the coffee, sir. Better take it, and you can always give it to a friend if you're not partial.
Well, since you're so kind as to include it with my coffee, I shall smoke it myself.
At which Mr. Harding is escorted upstairs into a room as rich and silken as a sultan's palace, with long rows of leather sofas, magazines and evening papers.
Here's your coffee, sir, and a light for your cigar.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you put your feet up on that sofa. Oh. You look worn to a thread, if you don't mind my saying.
He is, poor man, worn to a thread by worry and sleeplessness and conscience. But in this sultan's palace, with his feet up and a belly full of pork chops, hot coffee and cigar smoke, he reads one of the magazines she brings him, with its tales of seafaring and exploration.
Can I get you anything else, sir?
I am perfectly fine, thank you.
And slowly as he reads, the magazine falls from his hands, and he falls fast asleep.
I have a basket full of lobsters for you, Warden. The bishop has had them in his bed all night and asked me to remove them and bring them straight to you for a dressing down.
Dressing down? Lobsters?
And the kitchens are full of crabs working for that dastardly John Bold. Evil crabs. Crabs with notebooks and pens listening to everything we say.
Crabs with pens?
Don't mind Theophilus. He's always like this when the moon is full.
Bishop, thank goodness.
No, you just settle back while I pick all these limpets off the sofa behind you. The shells are a test for one's teeth, huh? But they're delicious, Septimus.
Mr. Harding, would you like me to dance for you? I do a rather delightful belly dance. Or would you like some more coffee, sir?
Sir? Sir, would you like some more coffee?
Oh, my goodness, Emma. I must have drifted off.
You've had a good long kip there, sir.
What time is it?
Nearly 9:30.
9:30? Oh, my goodness. I should be in Westminster.
I'm very sorry to have kept you waiting so long, Mr. Warden, and sorry for keeping you up at so disagreeable an hour.
No, Sir Abraham. It is I who should apologise to you for making a claim on your time.
Nonsense. It's a pleasure to meet the man behind such an interesting case.
Yes, Sir Abraham, about the case.
And I'm pleased to say, Mr. Warden, that all our trouble about this lawsuit has come to an end. Of course, they must pay all the costs, so the remaining expense to you and Dr. Grantly will be trifling.
I fear I don't quite understand you, Sir Abraham.
Well, don't you know that their attorneys have withdrawn the suit?
Well, I had heard something, but I'm afraid that doesn't take away the crucial problem.
What crucial problem, sir?
That the affairs of Hiram's Hospital are not arranged according to the will of its founder.
None of such institutions are, Mr. Harding, nor can they be. The altered circumstances in which we live do not admit to it.
But do those circumstances give me the right to 800 a year? Sir Abraham, what I want you to tell me is this. Am I, as warden, legally entitled to all the proceeds of the property after the due maintenance of the 12 beadsmen?
Well, legally entitled is not the most apposite way of framing such a question.
But am I entitled, Sir Abraham?
All I need to tell you, Mr. Harding, is that it would be madness to raise any further question on this matter. The suit has been abandoned, and all will continue as before.
May I sit down?
Oh, of course, of course. Forgive me pacing. I cannot sit down until my day's work is done. Are you quite well, sir? What are you doing with your hands?
Oh, yes, sir, I'm quite all right. I'm a cellist, you see.
But you have no cello.
I find it gives me solace. It helps me to think.
Well, there's nothing to think about, Mr. Harding. You have no power to raise a legal suit when the other party has withdrawn.
But I can resign as warden.
What? Throw it up altogether?
Oh, did you see those articles in the Jupiter?
Of course I heard about them. My time is too precious to read such nonsense.
Well, I read them all.
Hadn't you better wait till Dr. Grantley is in town with you before you take such a serious step?
Well, I cannot wait.
Unless, of course, you have private means sufficient for your wants, so resignation would not injure you.
No, I haven't a sixpence.
God bless me! Then how do you mean to live?
Well, there is a small living available in the church of Crabtree Parva.
I really think, Mr. Harding, that you must wait for the Archdeacon. There is not the slightest necessity to resign. You have come here to ask my advice, and my advice is that a man is never the best judge of his own position.
A man is the best judge of what he feels himself. I'd sooner beg for bread than read another article like those in the Jupiter.
Nonsense.
Especially if you feel, as I do, that the Jupiter writer has truth on his side.
Sir, I believe you have an unmarried daughter.
I do?
Then pray, how can you put your young daughter in the way of such financial peril?
My God knows how much I love my daughter. But I would sooner that we should both beg than live in comfort on money which is truly the property of the poor.
Mr. Harding.
I cannot boast of my conscience, sir, when it required the violence of a public newspaper to awaken it. But now it is awake. I must obey it.
After a day like that, a man needs to clear his head. So Mr. Harding walks slowly back to St. Paul's Chapter House Hotel. When he arrives, it's gone midnight. But he isn't the only soul awake. Oh, no.
Papa! I thought you were never coming back. I've been so worried.
I'm afraid the Attorney General could only meet me at the end of his day, Susan. Great men have their way.
And what, pray, were you doing with the Attorney General? You do realise it is not customary for clients to go direct to their counsel.
Oh, isn't it? Well, at any rate, I've done it.
Oh, good heavens!
And Papa, what did you say to Sir Abraham?
I asked him to explain John Hiram's will to me. He couldn't explain it in the only way that would have satisfied me, so I resigned the wardenship.
Resigned it? Resigned it?
Well, at least I told him that I would resign, so of course I must do so.
No, not at all. Nothing you said to Sir Abraham can in any way bind you, and I'm sure he didn't advise such a step.
Well, he did not.
In fact, I'm sure he must have advised you to consult your friends.
He did.
There, your threat of resignation amounts to nothing, and we are just where we were before.
You must be very tired, Susan. Wouldn't you like to go to bed?
I shall go when you go, Papa.
Why did you leave Barchester so suddenly this morning without giving us any notice?
I'm afraid I've had a very tiring day, and I really can't think any longer. I should go to bed.
At least promise me to take no further step without consultation.
I must get a candle for the stairs.
It would be madness to throw in your preferment. What will you live on?
Well, I have in mind the small living as vicar of Crabtree Parva.
You can't live on that!
It will be humble, but honest.
It's pitiful. It's not a living at all unless it's combined with other jobs.
Then I shall find other jobs.
How do you propose to pay the fees outstanding to Sir Abraham without a proper income?
Well, he said it would be trifling.
Trifling to him, yes, but not to us.
Well, I shall have to sell my furniture. Oh. And it is all I have to sell.
Think of Eleanor, Papa.
I do think of Nellie. Of course.
How will she live?
God that feeds the young ravens will take care of us also.
Pish! If the ravens persisted in refusing the food prepared for them, they wouldn't be fed at all!
Now, lest you were scandalized by Dr. Grantley shouting at a tired old man, it must be said that he has his father-in-law's best interests at heart. He's just got a strange way of showing it. But I'm worried, too. How can an elderly gentleman and his daughter live on a pittance in Crabtree Parva? They'll be ruined. They won't be able to pay for a housekeeper. So the diocese will send me to some godforsaken vicarage out of town. Nobody wants to lose them. So Dr. and Mrs. Grantley sleep fitfully and waken very early, keen to be in the breakfast room before Mr. Harding comes down.
He can't resign in any case. The bishop won't allow it.
I am as anxious as you are, Theophilus, but please try to be patient with him.
Your father is like a child, to throw up the hospital living because some scoundrel scribbled in a newspaper.
Please leave this to me.
I must be at the house at 8:30, so I'll have to leave it to you.
Good. Good morning, Papa. Please join us. The tea's still hot.
Then I shall. Thank you, my dear.
And would you like some bacon?
Oh, no, I shall sip my tea first, while I wake up.
I thought we might spend some time together today, Papa. Perhaps we could walk to Hyde Park.
Well, I must catch the 1 o'clock train home, my dear.
We go back on the 4 o'clock train. Will you not wait and travel with us?
Eleanor will expect me back sooner, and I've so much to do.
So much to do.
I suppose you won't be done with your meetings by one, Theophilus.
I very much doubt it. I have so much to do.
Then I suggest you go and start doing it, Theophilus, and leave me to talk to Papa.
Very well. I shall see you in Barchester, Warden.
I'm sure you will.
And I beseech you to take no further steps without speaking to the bishop. If you owe me nothing, at least you owe that to my father. Good day.
Papa, this is a most serious business.
Indeed it is. Waiter, please could you bring me pen, ink and paper? Thank you.
Are you going to write, Papa?
Yes, my dear, I'm going to write my letter of resignation to the bishop.
Pray, Papa. Please put it off until our return, until you've spoken to the bishop.
If I wait until I return to Barchester, I might perhaps be prevented.
But for my sake, for Eleanor's.
It is for your sake and Eleanor's that I do this. I hope at least that my children may never have to be ashamed of their father.
So, in front of his loving daughter Susan, and amid the cluttered cups and plates at the breakfast table, the warden writes a letter to his old friend.
My Lord Bishop, it is with the greatest pain that I feel myself constrained to resign into your lordship's hands the wardenship of the hospital at Barchester, which you so kindly conferred upon me. I need not explain the circumstances which have made this step appear necessary to me.
I say he writes his letter to the bishop, but in fact he writes two letters, one official and one personal.
My dear bishop.
I cannot send you the official letter without a warm expression of thanks for all your kindness to me. I know you will understand and perhaps pity the weakness which has made me resign from the hospital. I am not made of calibre strong enough to withstand public attack. I know, dear friend, that there is a small living at Crabtree Parva, and I hope that you will allow me to serve as vicar there. Please, let me have a line.
Please let me have a line from you to say that you forgive me for what I'm doing. I am, now, as always, yours most affectionately, Septimus Harding.
My dear. Oh, how did you know what train I was on?
I've been meeting every London train today, Papa. Come on, giddy up.
I'm sorry, Nelly. I hope I haven't worried you.
All that matters is to have you back. You've not been yourself these recent weeks, Papa.
Well, I'm at peace now, Nelly. As long as you can still respect me when I'm the vicar of little Crabtree Parva.
Of course. I'm just glad you're at peace.
I hope this hasn't shaken your affection for Dr. Bold, Nelly. He's a good man, and he loves you.
I know that, Papa. I know that.
Where is my nightshirt, dear?
I am not the keeper of your nightshirt.
I always leave it on the bed so I can find it.
It would appear that you don't always do that.
Why are you short-tempered with me? Ah, you see, it was under my pillow.
Short-tempered? Me? Theophilus, you have been in a blind fever for days.
That odious John Bold will see this as a victory.
He has abandoned the case.
Oh, are you so innocent, Susan? He only dropped the case because he wants to marry your sister.
I knew it. I knew you'd drag Eleanor into this.
I must say your father is most imprudent if he allows his courtship to continue.
He always was imprudent.
Well, if he doesn't take more care, that John Bold will be off with Eleanor.
I think he will be, whether Papa takes care or not. And why not?
Why not? That pestilent, interfering upstart, John Bold, the most vulgar young person I ever met. Do you want to see him meddling with our family's affairs?
I don't warm to Dr. Bold. He is a good deal too conceited for me. But then Eleanor does like him. And it would be the best thing in the world for Papa if they were to marry. He longs to see Nelly happy.
Good heavens, Susan.
Thank you, Mrs. Baxter. It's most kind of you to stay late.
You just call me if you'd like some more cake, or perhaps a sherry.
Tea will be perfect. Thank you.
Very good, miss.
So, Dr. Bold, what have we to discuss?
Well, I was hoping I could...
Before you start, I wanted to thank you for all you have done to heal the harm to my father.
I wish I could have stopped it completely.
Oh, the Jupiter. I won't have it in the house now.
I cannot read it either. And my sister has stopped... You know she wrote a column.
Yes, Mary told me. I didn't wish her to suffer for this.
She cannot bring herself to write for him. You know, Eleanor, that I regret the harm I did to your father more than anything I have ever done.
I know. And he knows it too.
I was doing it, I thought, for the best of motives. I never dreamt that...
You don't have to say all this.
I've already said it to your father.
And he forgives you completely.
But do you?
Of course.
I mean, completely.
I don't know what else I can say.
You could say that you love me, even a fraction as much as I love you, Eleanor.
Oh, John.
I carry you in my heart every second of every day and every night. If you cannot return that love, then I will still bear it. Nothing will ever change that. But if I dare to hope that you might...
I do return it, John.
You do?
I do.
Now, friends, I wish to drink your healths before we part company, but first, a few words. There has lately, I believe, been some misunderstanding between us, and as a result, I have thought it best to go.
We never wanted to drive your reverence away.
No, Mr. Handy. I'm sure you did not wish to turn me out. This is my choice. I'm not a very good hand at a lawsuit, as you may guess. And when it seemed that our quiet life would be disturbed, I thought it better to go.
I am neither angry nor offended with any man in the hospital.
Then you're a holy man, Mr. Hardy.
Oh, no, Bunce, I'm far from that. But please, forgive me if I offer some advice. Some gentleman will take my place here very soon, and I hope and pray that you will receive him in a kindly spirit and raise no further question as to the amount of his income, for all your wants and needs are adequately provided for here.
God bless your reverence, we knows it now.
Yes, Mr. Harding, I believe they do understand it now. Now that they've driven from under the same roof with them, such a master as not one of them will ever know again.
Leave it out there.
Now that they're like to be in sore want of a friend.
Oh, come, come, Mr. Bunce. Oh, you mustn't speak so.
We none of us never wanted to do Mr. Harding no harm.
No.
If he's going now, it is not our doing. I don't see for why Mr. Bunce speaks against us.
Because you've ruined yourselves, and you've ruined me too. That's why.
Nonsense, Bunce, nonsense. There's nobody ruined here. I hope you'll all let me leave you as friends. Yes. I'm sure you'll have a good friend in your new warden, and if ever you want another, but I shan't be far away. Yes. Now, please, charge your glasses for a toast.
But not everyone is reconciled to this turn of events. Oh, no. Over by the rose bushes, Mr. Harding's daughter Susan is struggling to calm her husband.
It's a disgrace. Your father has caved in, and we shall all pay the price.
Keep your voice down, Theophilus. Is it so terrible? I haven't seen Papa so glad for weeks.
How can he be glad? He's been ruined.
And if the Archdeacon looked a little florid in the cheek, he'll turn to beetroot when he hears this.
And I have one more announcement to make, a very special one. Nellie, come and stand by my side.
Oh, Papa, you embarrass me.
It is with the very greatest joy and pride that I can tell you what Nellie told me last night, that she and the good Dr. John Bold are engaged to be married.
Well, bless my soul!
Dr. Bold?
Now, please, raise your glasses. God bless the beadsmen of Hiram's Hospital. May you live contented and die trusting in the Lord Jesus Christ and thankful to Almighty God for the good things he has given you. Cheers.
Mr. Harding!
Mr. Harding!
Mr. Harding, please! Please, play us something.
Go on. I cannot impose that on all these good people and ruin my daughter's good news.
Oh, go on, Papa. I'd love you to play something.
For me too, sir. I pray.
Your cello is here, sir. Oh. I thought it would be a fine way to finish the party.
Well, it seems I have no choice then. I apologize to those of a musical disposition. I am about to play.
I couldn't live anywhere but Barsetshire. And who in their sound mind would wish to? On a summer's day, at a garden party, was Mr. Harding happy again? It really is a glimpse of heaven. Or the closest I've seen.
In The Warden, Mrs. Baxter was played by Maggie Steed, Septimus Harding by Tim Pigott-Smith, the Bishop by Andrew Sachs, and Archdeacon Grantly by Malcolm Sinclair. Susan Grantly was played by Charlotte Emerson, John Bold by Brian Dick, Eleanor Harding by Claire Price, and Abel Handy by Nick Brimble. Bunce and Sir Abraham were played by Sean Murray, Tom Towers by David Seddon, and Mary Bold by Georgie Fuller. The music was composed by David Tobin, Jeff Meegan, and Julian Gallant. The Warden was written by Anthony Trollope, adapted for radio by Michael Simmons-Roberts, produced by Charlotte Riches, and directed by Susan Roberts.
If you'd like to receive our newsletter with full details of the week's radio dramas, just search for BBC Radio Drama Newsletter.